Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 115. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Memorial Day is my partner in crime, Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Monday, happy Memorial Day weekend. How are you?
I'm great, Dave. Happy Memorial Day to Steelers Nation. Dave, I got to ask you, did you go outside this weekend? I saw a picture of you outside. What?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, look, you got to stop and smell the roses every once in a while. Went out, sat by the pool for a little bit. Actually found my way to a casino for a little bit as well, too. And yeah, you know, occasionally, especially this time of year, I like to try you out. Look, I don't make a habit of it, but you need to get out every once in a while. Of course, especially my wife likes to get out, you know, make me get out occasionally as well. So, yeah, I'm not opposed to it here and there, but that did indeed happen. I don't think I'll get out much today, any today, but for those of you that are out and about today, have a safe Memorial Day, obviously, and hopefully your weekend's gone fine, and God bless those of you in the military and who have had family members in the military, and especially those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. We do not discount that. And look, I come from a military family myself, being born and raised in the panhandle of Florida, Pensacola to be exact. That's where the big Navy base is there. So I know all about coming from a military town and being from a military family. So once again, thank you to all of you who serve or have served in the past as well. Alex, look, you know, here we are. The Steelers wrapped up their first week of OTAs last week. They'll start week two this on Tuesday. You know, I think we pretty much beat up, what took place in the first week fairly well. You know, no sense to rehash a lot of that. The next stage, I guess, it's going to be kind of tough to do at this point, being as all the topics that we covered. But, you know, kind of what we're looking for in week two here. And, you know, I'll kind of throw one thing out here for us to start with. And because obviously we're going to be at the mercy of what the beat writers can and can't report and the type of interviews. You know, hopefully we'll have a few more interviews that there'll be some juicy tidbits in that we can discuss. But I think weighing on my mind right now is, will Le'Veon Bell be around for second week of OTAs? We heard Ben Roethlisberger talk about Le'Veon not being there last week and how, you know, he understands that he might, you know, they're probably not going to be able to practice, but would like to have him there nonetheless from the chemistry and team aspect and all. So I think that's the biggest thing that's on my mind is, will Le'Veon Bell be there starting on Tuesday?
Yeah, that's probably right up there for me too, Dave, because we're likely not to learn a lot of new information once we've gone through this first week and you've talked to some of the players we haven't heard of before, and we have a general idea where some of these guys are running at key positions like cornerback. Of course, you know, Le'Veon Bell not being there is not the worst thing in the world. I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill, but I see some people say that there's no value for guys in general to be at OTAs, the veterans, and it's just for the rookies and the younger guys. That's not really true. You know, it's all about team building. It's for a veteran to be around the young guys so the young guys know how to work and they can learn from a veteran. So there's a lot of value, I think, to having the veterans, you know, even the stars like Bell who don't need this or aren't going to be able to participate, still in that facility around that locker room. He's the only one that's not there, so it kind of sticks out, I think, a little bit more than, you know, if there were a couple other guys missing.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I wasn't expecting him to do anything the rest of this off season. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, OTAs, mandatory mini camp. In fact, you know, he'd probably still even be a perfect candidate to just in case start on training camp on active PUP. I mean, you obviously hope it doesn't come to that, but you know how Tomlin likes to be cautious with some of these players and all, and even though the groin surgery happened, you know, several weeks ago, look, I mean, not expecting him to do anything, like I said, most of the summer, but I mean, for Ben Roethlisberger to call you out like that,
yeah,
you know, there's something there. Ben wants him there, and it'll be interesting to see if Bell shows up.
And I think Bell being hurt actually provides more incentive to be there because, you know, obviously there's a whole contract issue. Maybe the him not being there has something to do with, you know, him hoping and angling for the long-term deal. But he's not going to be able to practice anyway, so there's no risk of him practicing and getting hurt and wrecking his contract situation, assuming that he's going to miss, you know, the rest of the spring while he recovers from that groin surgery. So, you know, he just has to basically just show up at the facility and everything's kosher. So I'd like for him to be there. Maybe he uses last week as just kind of his get his point across week, and hopefully he comes back for this week's OTAs.
Yeah, but as far, I mean, look, we all know the contract situation with him. We know the tag number. His agent, you know, is going. It's not like there isn't anything hidden there that we don't know. We know he's going to get a deal. I mean, I think everybody listening to this, for the most part, would be shocked if he doesn't. I know some people are saying, well, he's not worth 12 point whatever million. Well, look, you can structure this thing where he is worth, you know, that money early on in the contract. Look, I think he's worth, you know, worth the tag amount, and the Steelers have obviously already told him he's worth that amount. Now, as far as setting this thing up over the life of the deal, as I've said several times, my hope is that, you know, a lot of his 2017 money is in a form of a base salary, you know, and or roster bonus, and they, you know, and that they the Steelers don't have to give him a huge signing bonus because of the fact that I would like a large portion of that 2017 money to be off the books, if you will, at the end of the season. Because moving forward, obviously, when you're dealing with a guy playing running back, and of course the injuries that he's had in the past, and the suspensions and everything like that, you know, you don't want to have a lot of potential dead money out there. So, there's no real statement to make when it comes to, okay, I'm not going to show up for OTAs. I think he's only hurting the other players on the team by not being able to learn from him, kind of as you stated there. And on the flip side, look, I can understand that he doesn't want to come and have maybe that first session with the media, okay? But he's going to have it sooner or later. I mean, whether he reports now, whether he reports for mandatory mini camp, first day of training camp, what have you. Just go ahead and show up and give the cliche, you know, answers, and, you know, I'm just here to help the team, and you know, I let the contract, you know, take care of itself and that kind of thing. But just, you know, just come and get it behind you. If that's the big thing that's weighing on your mind, look, I mean, he's had to answer tougher questions in the past concerning the suspensions and all. To me, going in and answering a few questions about where he is in contract negotiations, if that's what's holding him back right now, just get in town and get that behind you.
Right. Yeah, I'd be surprised if that was the driving reason. I mean, and heck, the Pittsburgh media, I think, was pretty friendly to Martavis Bryant off suspension, so I doubt they'd grill Bell too heavily on the contract. But, you know, ultimately, again, I understand it's not the biggest deal in the world. I'm positive he'll be there for the mandatory stuff, and, you know, it'll all be forgotten come training camp. And the important thing is for Bell to get healthy and be ready for the start of the regular season. But, you know, like you said, if Ben makes a point about it, then it's a real point.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, what else? I mean, geez, you know, we kind of know where these cornerbacks are lining up at. I guess it'd be nice to hear maybe the running order of some inside linebackers there, but I mean, not a huge deal. I mean, the offensive line, you and I went through that last week. They're not going to be really any surprises there. James Conner missing some time with a hamstring injury. It's probably not hard to figure out the running back lines. I guess it'd be interesting maybe to hear some what the wide receiver lines look like, but what theoretically is there that we can learn about some of these lines or the depth chart, you know, outside of the cornerback position here moving forward into week two?
Right. The one name I'd like to circle, because I haven't heard much about where he's at in OTAs, is Juju Smith-Schuster, because there is that, you know, because Todd Haley was pretty noncommittal to saying where they were going to play him when he was first drafted, saying he's versatile. He's played inside. He's played outside. We'll see what he gravitates to. And I haven't heard if he's playing in the slot, playing at the Z, or both. I assume it's one to start. So hopefully we get a little nugget of information on where Smith-Schuster is at, because, you know, I've been trying to – I've pounded the table for him starting in the slot, and obviously if he's not playing there in OTAs, then that may not come true. If he is, then, you know, maybe my odds are better. So that's maybe the top thing I'm hoping to hear about, but, again, we don't know what information we're going to be able to be privy to.
For such a young kid, I'm really impressed with his interviews so far, especially going back after the draft and listening to some of his stuff from his final season at USC and all. Does he come off as he comes off to me as a extremely smart kid. I mean, especially for his age. Now, you know, football IQ sometimes, you know, it's hard to discern on tape, but, you know, I didn't see a lot of things and trust me, I've gone through a lot of his USC tape from last year after the draft has taken place. But, I like where this guy, this kid is from a football mentality standpoint. And, you know, one would think he should be able to pick this thing up sooner rather than later.
Right. And now, granted, playing the slot is such a difficult position. And I think it was Josh Dobbs that was talking about, you know, how complicated the Steelers in the NFL slot position is compared to what they did at Tennessee in college football. So I don't want to undersell, you know, how difficult that position is, and likewise for the slot position at cornerback. But, you know, I think, like you said, Smith-Schuster has shown such an advanced maturity for 20 years old, and I think maybe that's partly because he's always been the youngest guy on the teams he's been on, and he's always been around guys older than him, more mature than him, and he's kind of matched that level. So I look at that. I look at his willingness to do whatever it takes, whether that's block, play special teams. He's a very much hand in the pile type guy, and I think he shows that football IQ on tape. I talked about that, you know, once I really got into his tape after he was drafted, his man zone, you know, rules, finding grass in coverage, running away from defenders, settling down, showing the quarterback your numbers, his work in scramble drills, keeping the play alive, staying in the cone of vision of quarterbacks, and the ability to make tough catches in traffic with really good hands and some yak ability. I think, again, at a baseline level, he has all the traits you need in the football IQ to have a lesser learning curve than usual to play in the slot. So I can't guarantee, obviously, it's going to work out there. He's going to compete against Eli Rogers, who's got a year under his belt on the NFL field. But I think the potential is really, really high.
All right, outside of hoping we're not writing about injuries, into this second week of OTAs, and as you mentioned, you know, finding out, you know, a few more tidbits about how some of these lines are shaping up here with the depth chart and all. I mean, what else is there? I mean, really, we're probably going to have a little bit less to talk about in week two and week three of OTAs than we had to talk about during the first week, right?
Yeah, it's the diminishing returns of OTA. So, you know, maybe tight end, but, you know, we kind of have a good idea who's running there. And some of those guys are running almost together. You can't really debate Odom versus Orndorff. And, you know, Grimble's going to be above them. But, you know, Grimble, David Johnson, it's all kind of, you know, different skill sets. And it's hard to discern. So there's not a whole lot, I guess, I'm looking for position-wise. And, you know, we're not going to really hear about who's doing well. But, you know, whatever, we'll get whatever we can get at this point.
All right. At the end of the podcast on Friday, I mentioned that I was looking forward to listening to an interview that Mark Dominic had on Sirius XM NFL Radio talking about Joshua Dobbs. I like Mark Dominic. I think he does a heck of a job on ESPN. For those that don't know, Dominic was spent 17 years with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as their director of pro scouting, and then ultimately their general manager. So one would think that, you know, this guy knows a thing or two when it comes to scouting players. Heck, you know, he was there that long. Mike Tomlin was there for a few of those years when Dominic was there. You know, Dominic was talking about, look, they were going through all the teams and like quarterback situations ended up what happened on that show when they got to the portion talking about the Steelers. Him and co-host, I think Adam Kaplan was the one co-hosting with him on Thursday. They were asked, a caller called in saying how, you know, they're not confident about Landry Jones being the backup to Ben should something happen. And, you know, they kind of went into an answer from Mark Dominic there. And in short, Dominic was asked about the Steelers' backup quarterback situation heading into the season. And he said, you know, he's pretty, you know, pretty firm with this, that he said it's in his belief that Dobbs will overtake Landry Jones for the number two spot behind Ben Roethlisberger by the time week one rolls around. And this is his exact quote. And he says, you know, I think Josh Dobbs beats him, meaning Jones, out already this year and becomes the number two for this year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think Josh Dobbs becomes possibly the heir apparent. He went on to say, I just really think that if Josh Dobbs is fully dialed into the NFL and devotes himself in a way that I think he will, I personally think he will, from a cerebral standpoint and from an arm talent standpoint, he can do it. Now, he went on and said a few other things, but the whole gist of what his defense for claiming that Dobbs can beat out Landry Jones, you know, for the number two spot for the start of the season, was the fact that he's so smart, he loves football, and he has arm strength. Those were the three things he kept banging on the entire time. Look, I respect Mark Dominic, as I said, there's a halfway decent chance maybe that Dobbs can overtake, I guess, Landry Jones at some point during the season. But I would be absolutely shocked if you know, come week one of the season that Joshua Dobbs has overtaken Landry Jones.
Well, Dave, I know what quarterback Mark Dominic would have drafted if he was still a GM of a team. I think it'd be Josh Dobbs.
This is the same guy that drafted Josh Freeman, right?
right. I agree. I like Dominic, and certainly that would be great news, I think, for Pittsburgh in their evaluation of Dobbs, if they felt so comfortable with him that he became the number two. But I'm with you. I think it's really unlikely it happens this year at all. I think next year is going to obviously be your better chance. You know, Dobbs just has to learn to prepare off the bench and how to go through that process, because while he did a little bit of that early in his Tennessee career, coming in for injury and whatnot, I think one of the toughest transitions any quarterback has to make is going from being the guy in your college town, like Dobbs was at Tennessee, to now the lowly number three who barely gets reps and kind of has to fight for everything and has no idea when he's going to play next and is more than likely not going to play at all. And you have to learn to still prepare like you're the starter, even though you acknowledge you're on the bench. Now, again, Dobbs has a great football IQ and a good attitude, and I think he'll handle it relatively well, but there's still an adjustment there that Landry Jones clearly knows how to do, has clearly proven himself before, the ability to come off the bench. He also is a great locker room guy and prepares really well and handles his role, I think, as well as you can expect, you know, from a mental preparation standpoint. So, yeah, week one, sorry, Dominic, it's not going to happen, and I doubt that changes by the end of the year, because once the season starts, Dobbs is doing a lot of scout team. There's not a lot of reps for him. I mean, what's he really going to show that's going to push him over Jones? You know, that Jones would have to play terribly, and then maybe the team makes a switch. But I don't think once you hit the regular season, Dobbs is going to even be able to show anything to warrant a switch. And I just don't think it's going to happen this year.
Yeah, and if it did happen, you know, it would be because of play during preseason, I think, and it would have to be Landry Jones just really, you know, playing poorly, and then Dobbs just having a, I don't know. I hate to use the Dak Prescott comparison, but if you go back and if you go back and remember the way Dak played last year during the preseason, it's easy to say, well, that's just preseason. But he did play well during the preseason. You know, you would have to have something, I think, similar to that. And here's the thing that Dominic said. Look, I mean, I don't have posters of Landry Jones hanging up in my office in here, but he was talking about Landry Jones, about why he got that 2-year contract extension. And I didn't like his answer. He says the reason Landry Jones got the contract that he did, he's a phenomenal person. And then he goes on to say, like, he's a really good locker room guy. I mean, the Steelers are not going to give you a 2-year contract extension just because you're one hell of a guy. I mean,
right.
I'm sure that that's part of it. And yeah, they didn't know if they were going to be able to draft a certain quarterback. You know, there are a lot of reasons why the Steelers re-signed Landry Jones, more to do with him being a great person in the locker room.
Right. He's got that experience coming off the bench. You know, Tomlin pointed to what he did in the Browns game week 17 last year. It also didn't hurt that he was dirt cheap. I mean, he's probably one of the cheapest, you know, veteran backup quarterbacks in the NFL. So he's a cheap, known commodity. And to meet Dominic halfway, I kind of understand his point, going back to what I said about, you know what you're going to get from him. He's a guy content with his role. He prepares like the starter. He is a good locker room guy. That is absolutely true. So, but there are definitely more factors on the field and his price tag as well than just being a nice guy. Otherwise, hey, Tomlin, give me a contract. If nice guys get contracts and for the Steelers, which certainly is not the only reason.
Yeah, and I wouldn't get one then.
I would sign you to a long-term deal, Dave. Just so
all right, Matthew Marks, he's been churning out the stuff so far this offseason, and I like how he like the series that he's been doing about 2017 offseason questions. Sometimes he has a clunker or two in there, but most of the time it gets you thinking with the things that he writes. And I think one of his latest ones was, will Vince Williams lose special teams role? And, you know, obviously with Lawrence Timmons now gone off to Miami, we all expect, Vince Williams to step in there and absorb most of, if not all of, the snaps that Lawrence played. And the question now becomes, I think, is, you know, Vince was, make no mistake about it, Vince had a huge impact on special teams over the course so far of it during his career. Will that continue? And I my gut reaction is probably not. You're probably going to ask someone else to start filling those shoes. I mean, you don't want your starting linebacker out there having car crashes, all the time.
Right, and this is one of the biggest questions for me, and one that doesn't get talked about too often, and understandably so, because it's special teams, and in general, we don't pay attention to that. But this is a huge question and a huge answer. If the answer is no, that Williams will not play special team snaps, then the question becomes, who replaces him? And so I agree with you that I doubt Williams will have much of a special teams role, certainly not what he's done in his career so far as a core special teamer, just because you can't have a guy run down kicks, sprint 50, 60 yards, and then go play defense for 10 to 15, play series potentially. That's just, you're going to wear the guy out. He's not going to get to play at the level he needs to. So, I'm guessing no. And the question becomes, like I said, who replaces him? And while, yes, special teamers and you find guys to replace, I understand that. Williams was arguably the best special teamer last year, and he's a leader, and I think he plays with an intensity that is hard to match, and he's a real tone setter for that unit, and you see it many, many times if you go back and really watch the tape, him putting guys on his butt, talking to guys, John with him, getting himself hyped up, and I guess I can't say I know this for sure, but I think the rest of that unit follows Vince Williams' lead, and so now you're not going to have that guy around. And there's still good special teamers. Rosie Nix, I mean, one of my favorite guys. He's cut from a similar cloth. Chicolo, we'll see if a guy like Keon Adams can become a core special teamer. But Vince Williams is a rare guy, I think, and his skill set was more than just what he did, on the tape. I think there was an intangible element, too, that you're missing. So it's going to be tough, I think.
And the thing is, too, look, I know Steven Johnson doesn't have a lot of, fans, or, a lot of people are already thinking that Steven Johnson might not make this 53-man roster, but The guy can play special teams, and he was leading this team in special teams tackles before he injured his ankle last year. He's the kind of guy that always seems to be able to find his way. You know, he's like Terrence Garvin was, you know, he always seems to find his way down the field and make a tackle or be in on a tackle there. So, I don't think you can use the angle that, okay, well, Vince Williams won't play on special teams, so we'll just replace him with Steven Johnson, because last year those two were part of special teams before Johnson went down. So now you're back to you're back to kind of square one in regards to that. I've said it several times that, you know, bless Arthur Motes' heart, he probably wants to help out in that area. And he had to do it later on, you know, later last season. But in a perfect world, do you want Arthur Motes to be one of your core guys? And my answer would be no. Now, obviously, it's easy to go ahead and pencil in Tyler Matakavich to be in that role. I guess it's easy to kind of pencil in Anthony. Look, Anthony Ciccolo turned out to be a better special teams player than I ever thought he would be. You know, right. I think he's going to be in that role as well. You know, do you really want T.J. Watt out there? I mean, is that something T.J. Watt can do? Or do you want that to happen?
I think he'll get some snaps because he's going to be in a rotation, and I mean, he got a supreme athlete with the ability to get off blocks. I think you're going to see it to some extent. I think they'll at least try it.
And then I guess where I'm going to this is back to an article I wrote a few weeks ago talking about how, hey, you know, it's fun to write it every year about how all the draft picks might make the 53-man roster. as we sit here right now in late May, Alex, I really like the chances of all these draft picks to make the 53-man roster. And I think I wrote in that the two biggest question marks. Now, I think I wrote this right before Greg Warren was released. Now, since that has happened, boy, Colin Hulba's pretty much a lock now. That was one of the question marks we had about, you know, the three players that really had a lot to prove making the roster. I like Keon Adams' path to the 53 as being slightly easier than a guy like Brian Allen's, and I still maintain that as we sit here and, you know, a few weeks later here. I think if Keon Adams can be that guy, you know, and have that special teams mentality, I think there's a chance that he might be the guy that could replace Vince Williams on special teams.
Yeah, that's kind of the name I keep thinking about, too. And I don't doubt the team is going to have names to replace these guys. I mean, you know, you're going to have Adams. Like you said, you have Chick. He ran through the lot, I think, pretty well. It's just, you know, Williams is just a different kind of dude, I think. He was that hair on fire, you know, knock you over or even after a touchback kind of play, and then get up in your face and start yelling at you for it, that I think it's just tough to replace. And I think there's an intensity level that, you know, I don't know if a rookie like Adams is going to be able to quite match. You know, your special teams guys, they got to be a little crazy, you know. They got to have kind of the cross eyes going on and just not quite right. And Williams, I think, fits that to a T.
Jordan Dangerfield's another one of those guys.
Right. You think of some of the best special teamers in over the years. Rosie Nix, I think, is another guy that fits that bill. You know, you think about guys like, you know, Clint Creedwalt back in the day, my guy, Chidi Iwuma. We're going to name drop a Chidi Iwuma in here, Patrick Bailey and the like. So I think it's just tougher for a rookie to fill those shoes immediately. But I think it's going to be in play. But the last that I'll leave you on special teams is, you know, the coverage unit last year, not the best, obviously. And so you remove one of your best coverage guys in Vince Williams, and now you're kind of crossing your fingers.
Yeah, and especially towards the end of the season there, where you had a few of the injuries there with Ciccolo missing, you know, having that ankle, you know, and then you had to have Motes out there and all like that. And obviously, I think they went, you know, downhill some ever since Steven Johnson got hurt early on in the season as well too. So. Look, I the short answer to Matthew's question about Vince Williams, I think, is no. He's not going to be out there. But sometimes you have to have your best guys out there, right? I mean,
right.
I'll be surprised if it does happen, if he's out there. But, I mean, there's no mistake that Vince Williams has the mentality or had the mentality mm-hmm. to play special teams.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so you think there's a better chance, I know it's probably close, but there's a better chance Keon Adams makes the roster than Brian Allen? Is that kind of where you're at right now?
Only by a hair. I mean, yeah. I think his path is just a little bit easier because of the, I mean, look at the depth chart, you know, at outside right. linebacker and all, you know, I mean, who does Keon Adams have to jump? Arthur Motes, and it's pretty much, if you mm-hmm. ask me, it's Arthur Motes, and that's it, you know?
Right, yeah, sure.
And, you know, Arthur Motes is a guy, put it to you this way, if you cut Arthur Motes during the final 53, how many teams are going to be out there lining mm-hmm. up to sign him?
Right, not many.
Mm-hmm. You know, so...
But Allen would really have to jump just one corner. Now, who that corner is a tougher question, but he only has to be better than the worst guy, you know?
Yeah, but I think...
Because they're gonna keep six corners.
Right, right. I just think his path of jumping is a little bit easier than Brian Allen's is.
Yeah, but did you... I know you saw the interception Allen had in rookie minicamp.
Oh, that boy, yeah. And, I mean, it's easy. I mean... Heck, you see something like that, it's easy to get excited, but it was just mm-hmm. How many times do those things happen during rookie mini camps and OTAs that we don't see? You know, those guys mm-hmm. we never hear from them again, kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's easy to get excited about stuff like that. All right, where else should we go? Should we start answering a few questions that we got from listeners here?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay, we'll start off. we get some. We got some good ones. We'll play around, I think, with a few of these. Being as how it's Memorial Day weekend. Let's see. From Steven Bozo Jabroni on Twitter. Do you think Harrison or Watt has 10 plus sacks between them in 2017?
That is a good one. I think it's right around 10 because, you know, even though I am excited about T.J. Watt, you still have to temper expectations for a rookie to try to get sacks. You know, I think 4 to 5 is the ceiling for Watt his rookie year. And, you know, I think Harrison's been between 5 and 5.5 each of the last three seasons in Pittsburgh. So I'll say it's right around 10.
All right. But is it over or under?
I'll say over by a half, 10.5 combined.
I will go over with about that same number as well, too. I think James Harrison can get you 4.5 to 5.5, and I'm going to be optimistic that Watt's going to get a couple gimmies in there, along with a few earned ones as well, too. So I think it's...
Who has more sacks in? It sounds like you're saying Watt might have more sacks. If you're going over 10.
I think there's a chance that Watt can have maybe one full one more than Debo. So,
wow.
Color me very optimistic when it comes to Watt. Look, it'll be a good problem to have if we're sitting here talking about, boy, those two... If you can get a total of 22 or so out of your outside linebackers this year in total, which I think is a little mm-hmm. bit optimistic, but I mean, look, you're going to have hopefully Dupree for a full season here, Chickalo, you know, even though there were some gimmies in there, Chickalo had, what did he have, 4 last year? What did Chick have?
A couple, I can't remember the number, three or something.
Yeah, three. I think you have some games there against Cleveland where you get to load up on a few of them in there. So yeah, I'll be optimistic like you and think especially on that right side with Harrison and Watt that maybe they can top the 10 number. Also from Steven, do you think Sean Davis could have a Pro Bowl season this year? You know, look. Will Sean Davis go to the Pro Bowl? Probably not, because this is such a mm-hmm. you know, fan favorite thing. But I mean, if you go back and look at the numbers that Sean Davis put up last year, stats-wise, and you know it's hard just to look at total tackles and those kind of things, but he did so with only starting, what, eight or nine games? Mm-hmm. There is reason to believe that, you know, that he's going to have a better season in 2017. So, yeah, I don't know. How do you define a Pro Bowl season for a safety?
Mm-hmm. Here's how I'll define it is, you know, you got to make some splash impact plays. That's something that has been missing from the Steelers safety spot since, you know, Troy was released by the Steelers. You know, his career ended. And Davis, that's kind of one of the bigger things I'm looking for Davis is because Mitchell is never going to be a several interception kind of guy. He'll force a couple fumbles potentially, but he's never going to be, you know, picking off a ton of passes. I want to see Davis be able to do that. And that's what's going to separate a good safety from, you know, a real noteworthy impact safety. So that's kind of one of the big things I'm looking for from Sean Davis, because I think he had, what, just the one interception last year, which was a fourth down play against the Giants. So that's kind of how I define, if you want to call it a Pro Bowl type season.
Yeah, you'd like to see him not miss. How many sacks could Davis have had last year that he missed in the backfield?
Mm-hmm. There were several, yep.
You know, so you clean those kind of things up, add another couple interceptions there. And I think it's possible with him. You know what I'd like to see out of him is something that you know, we need to start measuring more. We talked about it with Stephon Tuitt the other day, coming up and making run stops. You know, and not just mm-hmm. run tackles, tackles that count, you know, mm-hmm. Those kind of things. So, yeah, I think there's a possibility that, you know, if he stays healthy, plays and starts all 16 games, I mean, I think we could be talking about a guy with 100 tackles, right? Three interceptions, maybe three sacks. I don't think it's out of the realm for that. And you know, maybe 6-7 run stops. I mean, am I close? Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping I'm going to try to be more optimistic on the interceptions and hope I hope he gets something like 5, because I really want him to become an impact player there as that kind of robber, you know, as a strong safety and just being able to come downhill and make some plays. So, you know, I don't know if he'll get 5, of course, but that's kind of my expectations for him, because someone's got to make some big plays in this secondary and playing more man coverage. It's going to be tougher for the cornerbacks to do that because their backs are turned to the quarterback. Now the safeties are going to be, the onus is on them to finish those plays. You know, the cornerbacks are going to get the breakups potentially. So get a tip ball and be able to, you know, pick off one of these passes that are thrown into a tight window. So it's a big year for Davis in a lot of respects, getting more consistent as a tackler. I do expect him to get better, of course. Any natural time you go from first year to second year, playing in your position, strong safety from the get-go instead of being moved around from the slot to safety, it was a mess last year. So there should be growth, no doubt about that. But I want to see him take a bigger leap and really make some impact plays. I think that's what I'm looking for most of all.
All right, from our buddy David, Beaver Falls Hosiery, who does some writing for us, Subburger on Twitter. Does carrying three tight ends mean an extra wide receiver? Who would it be? We kind of have hashed this out a little bit mm-hmm. when we're talking about our roster predictions and all. Look, if they keep three tight ends, that extra spot goes to a special teamer, in my opinion. So if it's a wide receiver, if it's someone like Darius Heyward-Bey, maybe it's you keep an extra outside linebacker by like Keon Adams, or maybe another inside guy. You know, L.J. Fort's a guy that really we don't talk about a lot, but a guy that maybe can potentially. I think it's wide open. I don't think just because you're carrying three tight ends automatically rolls that number up to mm-hmm. what would it be, 6 or 7 with wide receivers. But look, we expect them to at least keep 5. I think at this point right now, I think Alex, you and I would both be surprised maybe if they don't keep 6 wide receivers. So mm-hmm. you know, where that extra spot comes from, you know, by only keeping 3 tight ends, I think you could see an imbalance of the 53-man roster being something like 24 offense, 26 defense.
Sure. Yeah, that last spot, any last spot comes down to merit. It's not just about filling out the numbers, so it's hard to generalize it and say, you know, 7 receivers or 6 receivers or whatever, you know, you want to say, but You know, I've been saying about seven receivers, so I'll state my case again. It is the deepest position on this roster. There's a ton of talent there. I think most of these guys are going to have good camps, and some of them are going to offer special teams value as well, whether that's DHB, obviously, as a gunner and on kick coverage, whether that's DeMarcus Ayers or Eli Rogers on punt returns, whether that's Sammy Coates even playing some gunner. And who knows what Justin Hunter is going to do if he's asked to do any of that. You know, I know his resume doesn't really show it, but you know, he knows his chances are running out. Maybe he tries to go that route to get onto the roster any way that he can. So I think that any sixth or seventh, you know, wide receiver spot, though, of course, not all would be active on game day, would have the potential for some special teams value.
All right. From I Might Have on Twitter, that goes by the handle at this Hellcat. Why the hush-hush on Bryant's drug addiction? It must be something more addictive than pot. Wow. That's quite a hot take there. look, you know, everybody with drug addiction is different. And I don't understand the question, why the hush-hush on Bryant's drug addiction? Because, I mean, I think everybody's written and talked about it a lot, and no, I think we assume because of based on what Martavis has said in the past about not smoking in over a year that it is pot. I've smoked a lot of pot in my time. Pot can be very addictive, and this coming from a guy at one time I was addicted to BC powders, so. You know, different things for different people, man. I don't think it's fair to say why the hush hush on it and to assume that it must be something more addictive than pot, because pot is addictive. I mean, you can get addicted to other things, you know, a lot easier than that, I think. So, yeah, I'm not sure which way you're going with that question there, but. You know, let's just hope whatever the addiction is, that, you know, he's able to get past it and all. Anything
right.
to add
yeah.
to that?
No, I think you said it well, and I appreciate the candor and honesty, Dave. But, yeah, I didn't understand the question about the hush-hush. Who's being quiet about it? I think we've all talked about it, recognized that Bryant was asked 10 times over about, you know, changes in his life and how he dealt with his suspension whenever he came back. So I don't know who's being hush-hush. And Bryant, to his credit, was pretty honest too and pretty forthcoming, talking about how he gets drug tested several times a week and he meets a counselor. I think he said every Wednesday. I mean, he got, you know, pretty specific about it. So, you know, I don't know what the hush hush is.
Yeah, I don't either. But, you know, we appreciate the question. A little bit of dialogue there, you know, created some talk there. Okay, from Josh A.H. Weiss, goes by, looks like at Brazil Josh on Twitter. Does 84 field more than 10 punts this year? I'll let you go first.
I say yes, because I know we've been trying to run AB out that punt return spot for years now, at least the last 2 years. And it's tough to replace one of the top punt returners in the NFL, one of the most dangerous guys in football with a ball in his hand. So I think maybe at some point halfway through the year they make a change. Who knows? But yes, I think AB gets more than 10.
I agree with you. I think, like it or not, I think AB's going to start the season as a punt returner. And it's, you know, unless Cameron Sutton, I personally think Cameron Sutton might have the best chance at unseating him, but
really,
yeah,
really,
I still do, but I don't think that's going to, I don't think it's going to happen, you know, by the start of the season. And I think AB, you know, returns more than 10 punts this year. And I think you just keep your fingers crossed that someone else, whether it be Sutton or whoever, is able by the second half of the season to wrestle that job away. But there's no reason, I don't think, in my opinion right now, to think that'll happen by the start of the year. And go ahead.
I think the guy with the best chance to unseat him is DeMarcus Ayers. I just can't see Sutton. I mean, I know they talked about it, you know, when Sutton got drafted, so the team, you know, discussed that with him. But a rookie defensive back returning punts for Mike Tomlin? Oh, man, I can't get on board with that. I can't see Tomlin agreeing to that.
That's why I say definitely not by the start of the season. You know, maybe
right, but I just at any point,
maybe midway through, and yeah, I admit it's a stretch. It is a stretch, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, do we really think DeMarcus Ayers is going? I mean, that's the only way DeMarcus Ayers, in my opinion, makes a roster, barring injury right now, is if he is able to unseat Antonio Brown as a punt returner. So.
And he was drafted basically with that in mind, and he's an offensive player with a year under his belt, so I think there's more confidence. But you know, Tomlin has more confidence in Ayers to do that than an unknown like Sutton.
We think both Ayers and Sutton get chances during the preseason, though, right?
I think they could explore it with Sutton, sure, but I think he's lower in the pecking order, and I think push comes to shove, I think Tomlin's philosophy is going to win out. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Gary Russell and Najee Davenport have returned kicks, you know, under Tomlin. It's not because they were electric players. It's because they were veteran guys. They were trusted. They guys that handled the football, you know, obviously as running backs, they understood ball security. And I think for Tomlin to go to a defensive guy in punts and putting a rookie out there to judge punts where you got, you know, you're trying to process a lot of information, especially when you're backed up in your own end, I think that's asking a lot out of a rookie and a guy that, you know, is not a natural, I guess, as a runner because he's not an offensive guy.
It'll be interesting to watch. And look, the little things like people don't kind of notice is that quick little bobble, you know, when fielding the punt during the preseason. All those little things add up when it comes to coaches evaluating that kind of stuff. I mean, you might return one. You know, return a punt, you know, 20 yards. But if you got that little bobble initially, you know, those kind of things are kind of frowned upon now. We see why the Patriots keep letting Cyrus, who's the kid out of Alabama that keeps fumbling for them?
Cyrus Jones.
Yeah. I mean, what, you would think Bill Belichick would have washed his hands of him a while ago, you know, but he keeps throwing him back there. But a good question here, something we'll be watching for sure. From Chris Golby on Twitter, at C Golby, Juju versus Eli Rogers stats this season. Wow. I mean, kind of tough to give you a prediction right here, but let's start with this, Alex. Eli Rogers had 48 catches for 594 yards and 3 touchdowns last year. Not bad, and probably if you asked any Steelers fan off the street to tell you if Eli Rogers had more or less than 40 receptions last year, I bet over 50% would tell you less.
I bet 50% would say, who's Eli Rogers?
Yeah. Will Eli hit that number in 2017? 48 catches.
I say no, because I think it's still going to be Smith Schuster taking his job either immediately or pretty early into the year, and that's not going to leave Rodgers with a spot.
I'm with you. I think, and look, you're talking to a guy that I was high this time last year on Eli Rogers. Not as high, I don't think, as David Todd was, maybe on Eli Rogers. And in fact, I don't remember the over and unders that we did prior to the season, but Eli caught more balls than what I thought he would. Got more playing time earlier in the season than maybe than I thought he would. Of course, it didn't hurt that Marcus Wheaton was banged up. And then, of course, you lose Darius Heyward-Bey for an extended period of time. Sammy Coates going down with the finger. I mean, a lot of things played into and is that a fair argument? Okay, Eli had 48 catches because of X, and X.
What are you asking, a fair argument?
Is it a fair argument that Eli Rogers ended up with 48 catches because Marcus Wheaton was down, Darius Heyward-Bey was down, Sammy Coates after week 5 went into the crapper?
He got the opportunity partially because of injury, sure, but, you know, to his credit, he did play well and he got better at the end of the year. Now, to be clear, I like Eli Rogers. I was one of the first guys, not to toot my own horn, but one of the first guys to talk about Eli Rogers when he was a UDFA out of Louisville that nobody heard of and nobody cared about. And I said, this guy can play. This guy can have a better than average chance for UDFA to make the squad. But, you know, I understand that you know, he's not a big yak dynamic threat, which is such a key for the Steelers for any position, whether if you're X, Z, or in the slot. And knowing about last year with some of the apparently questionable work ethic issues, being late to walkthroughs, getting sat for a game, you know, when you're in an ultra-competitive room that the Steelers wide receiver group is right now, you know, you better be 110% with your work ethic. If you're lax at all, you're going to be behind. And that thought still rattles around in my mind some.
All right, who has more catches, Juju or Eli?
Like I said, I'm going to say Juju because I think he gets that spot sooner rather than later and maybe immediately. And so I think Juju's the guy that could end up with 50 receptions this year like Eli did in 2016.
You think there's a decent chance that Juju can crack that 50 mark? I kind of have Juju as around, first number that pops in my head is slightly under 50, say around 45. 40 to 45. So you think he can surpass that number then?
Let me ask you this: Do you think Smith-Schuster's going to take Rodgers' job at any point this season and become the starting slot receiver?
Man, my hope is. I mean, how else are you going to get him on the field? You know, you're only going to go for. Let's assume they use him some in four wide receiver sets. I mean, how many of those are you going to have? Hopefully you're not having to use four wide receiver sets, quite a bit. So, I think he can crack it. The big question is how fast, you know,
that's my next question going to be to you. When do you think that would be? Quarter of the season, mid season, later in the year?
Probably about quarter season, I think, you know, week five, week six, right around in there. Now, I do think you try to get him on the field ahead of then, you know. How much, you know, 5-8 snaps, 10 snaps a game, but, it's all going to, you know, we talked at the top of the show, what's his football IQ level and how quick can he catch on, to that kind of thing. But,
I think logically, if you have a guy that's playing 10 or so snaps the first month of the season and then starting full on the rest of the way, I think generally speaking, those guys are going to catch 50 passes just because of the volume of snaps that you're getting, especially in the slot receiver where you're going to see a lot of action on third down.
Good problem to have, I hope.
Yeah, that is. No, it's a great – the receiver position, it's a great problem to have. I mean, you're nine guys that have played in the NFL before when you throw in with Kobe Hamilton and Justin Hunter. So I don't think there's any other – is there any other 90-man roster that can say they've had nine guys play, you know, pretty significant, you know, relatively speaking, NFL snaps before?
Yeah, you're right. And look, a guy like even a bottom-end guy like Kobe Hamilton, look, he might have trouble catching on elsewhere, assuming he doesn't make the Steelers this year. But if there are a few injuries, he's going to be on that short list that teams call, you know.
I think he'll get signed by somebody else, though. I think he showed well last year as that hard-nosed, kind of, you know, plucky special teamer potentially with the ability to make big plays on third down.
Yeah. Okay, this one from Simon Winstanley at Simon York CA on Twitter. Are we too excited about Brian Allen's awesome one-handed interception? I'll go first. Yes, but it's great that we can get excited about such a thing.
Right, yeah. It certainly does not mean he's going to make the team or he's going to be an impact player. Of course not, but it was just nice. It was a cool play. It was, it's a one heck of a play. If you haven't seen it, we have an article on Steelers Depot. I tweeted it out. It was off Brian Allen's Instagram account, to be clear. But, not too many corners, I think, on the roster right now that can make that play. So to see that rookie minicamp, you just see a natural athletic profile, and we understand Allen's ceiling is high, and that's a great reason why.
All right, from Johnny Belcher at Mr. No Followers on Twitter. Which impact is larger, the loss of Timmons or the gain of Cam Hayward for the defense?
Whew. Well, first of all, give Johnny some followers, Mr. No Followers. We got to help him out. I'm going to say the gain of Cam Hayward back because I think the drop-off from Timmons to Williams is not – too significant, and the gain of now going from, even with this roster, Tyson Alualu to Cam Hayward is obviously a massive jump. So yeah, I'm actually pretty convincingly Cam Hayward.
I would agree. Look, as much as broken up as I was about this team losing Timmons and all like that, the gain of Cam Hayward back this year, I think, is more important than the loss of Timmons, pretty much for exactly the way that Alex framed it there. From Jeremy Barbati at Jericho 4854 on Twitter. That's at Jericho 4854. What does Cinquez Golson have to do to earn a second contract? That's a great question, and the answer to that is he's not going to get one, period. I mean, if he does a lot, then he's going to be too expensive for the Steelers. And obviously, if he doesn't do anything, he's not going to get one. he would, for him to, you know, I guess the best, in all honesty, I think the best way for him to get a second contract is to win. When the starting slot spot at some point during this season, having a great season, following it up with another great season in 2018, and just hope he's in that middle of the road area where, hey, he's not going to ask a lot, and you can bet the Steelers aren't going to overpay for a cornerback. You know, I think that's where he's at. You know, as we sit here right now, I will be shocked one way or the other. I mean, I'll be shocked if he gets a second contract with the Steelers, and I'll be shocked if he's right now. I'll be shocked if he's on his 53 this year.
I don't know if I'd go so far to say I'd be shocked if he's on his 53, but I agree with your answer. He's just got to play well, make the team, and obviously play well when given the opportunity. But you know, I'm going to give you the bad answer. Just say, you know, make the team this year. You can't focus on the second contract. The guy's just trying to get on the field for a preseason game, which hasn't happened in the first 2 years. So, you know, you want to go the way of Sean Spence, not the way of Jordan Zumwalt. And that's got to start by getting healthy and just getting on the field and being able to make a couple of plays. So I'm not even – second contract is furthest from my mind, and it better be the furthest thing from Cinquez Golson's mind, and I'm betting that it is, because the focus is the now and the present, because to get that second contract – you got to play well today. You got to get on the field and prove your worth and in a hurry.
I think his best shot at a second contract would actually come after this season. You know, a situation where, you know, he still has 1 year remaining, but he had such a great season in 2017 that you want to kind of nip it in the bud. You know, kind of try to get yourself a deal early. I think that would be his best situation. But when it comes to corners, though, in the Steelers, yeah, they gave you know, Cortez Allen, you know, in fact they might still be smarting a little bit from that, where, you know, that they wouldn't go that route. But I would think that Cinquez, his best shot at getting a second contract with the Steelers might actually come before his contract's up. So I would say after the 2017 season.
Yeah. That's a fair point. Yeah, but we'll see what happens. It's certainly not a question to really entertain right now, I don't think.
Yeah, Elijah Brown on Twitter, at Elijah Genesis. Let's say Niall Davis doesn't work. Could you see D'Angelo coming back as a third string mentor to Bell and Connor? Never saw Bell as a leader, per se.
No, nope. I think D'Angelo's time is done. That third guy would be a special teamer, and that is not D'Angelo Williams.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you'd need a couple injuries to happen at this point for D'Angelo to come back. And I don't think Niall not working out would – look, I mean, you hope Niall's there because he can return some kicks. You hope maybe Connor can quickly overtake a guy like Niall, I think. So, look, I don't want to write D'Angelo off completely, because I think he still can offer you a little something maybe at the minimum. But if we're having a discussion about D'Angelo coming back at this point, I don't think it's going to be good.
Agreed.
That kind of thing. Elijah also writes, if Bryant stays clean and does something to the tune of, say, 11 TDs and 800-plus yards for the remainder of the rookie contract, do you think we resign him? Regardless of what happens with Martavis Bryant from here on out, I will be shocked if the Steelers re-sign Martavis Bryant.
I'll say there's a better chance than I think what you're saying, and I think what David Todd has said, because, you know, you have, what, 2 years? Because he's got 2 years left, right, Dave?
Right.
This year or next year? So I think you have a lot of time to, you know, you're not going to do it after this offseason. Of course, you're going to wait to the end of his contract. But I think that gives you plenty of time to really judge how he's changed, if he's changed, and, you know, how you think the rest of his career is going to go. So I don't think it's impossible. If after 2018, he's really shown that he's a changed guy, he's got two kids now, he's changed his outlook on life, he's making all the right decisions, he's got a positive support group and a good group of friends, I don't think it's impossible. Now, the contract you'd set up, there's going to be issues with that because you might deserve, might get a lot of money. You want to still maybe structure it in a way to protect yourself.
You're going to have to tag. It's messy. You're going to have to tag him first.
Yeah, you could tag. I mean, with the intent of getting a long-term deal done, is that the way you're looking at
it? Well, I'm saying if you don't sign him until after his fourth, you know, after the 2000. In other words, you're going to let him twist in the wind until through 2018. After, you know, final year of his contract, the only way you're going to retain Martavis Bryant at that point is to tag him first.
Why couldn't you get the long term deal done before free agency starts?
Because he would be silly if he's in any type of he would be silly not to hit the mark to let himself hit the market. If he has the kind of seasons, especially the one Elijah's laying out there, 11 TDs, 800 to 1,000 yards. Let's say he does. Let's say he scores 20 touchdowns and has 1,800 yards over the course of the next two seasons. Martavis would be absolutely silly not to test free agency after the 2018 season. He would, and the only way you're going to prevent that from happening is to tag him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
And are you going to tag? what's the tag going to be at that point? You know, I mean,
a lot of money. But well, you know, if they're winning here, if the Steelers were to give him a good contract, you know, I don't know. He might decide just to re-up right then and there and just say, you know, this is where the team that gave me the second chance, and I love the coaching staff here, and I get the chance to win. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
That's somebody needs to pinch you or wake you up. That ain't happening, brother. If he puts up the number even close to what I just said over the next 2 years, he is not signing a deal until the only deal that he signs is with another team or him signing the franchise tag. That no ifs, ands, or buts about it. In my opinion,
I'm writing this down right now. We're gonna revisit this in 2 years.
You write it down because
I will.
That's the only way. Is the only contracts that he signs after the 2018 season is one with another team for buttloads of money, or him signing a tag from the Steelers and then them hopefully working out a long term deal. And I will be shocked if the Steelers tag him after the 2018 season. So I expect Martavis to have two more years in Pittsburgh, hopefully. And then just like Plaxico Burress, you watch him ride off into the sunset.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. What is from Will at Will 43157? What is the ceiling for the Steelers defense this season?
Oh man. It's hard for me to try to quantify that. I think they can be another step in the right direction. I think they can be a good defense. I think they can be one that they can get a four-man pressure and make some bigger splash plays in the secondary. Now, keep in mind that's the ceiling. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I think the potential is there for that defense as a whole, every unit, the defensive line, the linebackers, and the secondary to all take a step forward. I think that's possible.
I think they have the makings to potentially be a top 10 defense this year. And I think it all going to revolve around pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not they're sacks or quarterback hits or what have you, I think it all relies on that. But I think they have the makings to be a top 10 defense this year. All right, we'll close it up with somehow we managed to fill this hour up today. Michael,
always do.
We have a lot of questions today, and that's great to see. Michael Abele, longtime follower of mine on Twitter, I know, has the most important question of the day. Sheets or Wawa?
Have you ever been to either, Dave?
I have not. I'm gonna throw in something at the end here, but I'll let you answer. Sheets or Wawa?
I think the question stems from a debate we were having last night on my Twitter page. For those who don't know, Sheetz and Wawa are like fast casual gas station food that's pretty regional to the Pennsylvania area, some expansion elsewhere. Basically the west side of Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania, the Pittsburgh area is the Sheetz area, and the east side is the Wawa area. I'm a Sheetz guy, though. Maybe I'm biased for being on this side of the state, and I've only been to Wawa once, to be fair. But I'll take Sheetz over Wawa. We have a Twitter poll up on my account right now. You can go vote in Sheetz versus Wawa.
The only thing I don't know about either. We call those convenience stores where I'm from. I have heard that Wawa has better coffee. So, based on third hand information there, if indeed Wawa has better coffee, sign me up for Team Wawa. as far as that goes, but other than that, I do not know. But at least it looks like we give a Sheetz about Michael's question.
Did you have that one in mind, or was that off the cuff, Dave?
That was kind of off the cuff. I'm a funny guy. I'm like a clown. Yeah, I amuse you.
Be here all week.
Be here all week. Try to veal. Tip your waiter, waitress. look, before we get out of here, real quick. And of course we're going to have a show on Monday, but before we get Matthew Marksey is about to start his fifth year with Steelers Depot. We have decided to pick up Matthew Marksey's fifth year option. And look, not enough can be said about Matthew Marksey, what he has done for the site. The fact that he's stuck with us for and going on his fifth year is absolutely incredible. A lot of you wake up to what Matthew Marksey writes every morning. I can't say enough about the guy. You don't hear a lot about him whatsoever, but if you get a chance and you're on Twitter, it's at M Marksey, MarkCzi, right? Did I get that right, Alex? But not enough can be said about Matthew Marksey. I'm proud he's been with me as long as he has. You want to add anything, Alex?
No, he's been such an asset to the site, and just that consistent workload of posting quality content. I'm amazed at the stuff he's able to find and the way he's able to produce new content on a daily basis. Really helps carry the site in the morning. And tremendous asset. So if you haven't followed him, please do it. He doesn't tweet a lot, but whenever he does, he usually got something good to say. He'll usually make me sound stupid. Make a great point. I go, oh, I should have thought about it that way. So he's been around for a long time, and I think a big reason why the site is where it's at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you get a chance and you're on Twitter, just say, hey, congrats on whatever, just let him know that he's appreciated, because we certainly do appreciate him. We don't talk about him enough as it is. And happy Memorial Day weekend to all of you once again. Hope you have a safe one, and we'll be back on Friday talking about the things that didn't happen during week two of Steelers OTAs. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.